Well, first of all, I wanted to thank Mike and Sarah for going through all this effort to arrange, and there was a third person. And Christoph, of course. I thought you were talking about him. No, and Christoph, of course. Thank you very much. This is great. This is becoming a lovely tradition. I'm always delighted to hear all the talks that come here. They're always very stimulating. So thank you, the three of you, very, very much. Well, last time we spoke in Ottawa, I talked a little bit about secant varieties of Segre varieties, but I talked about their dimensions, and we've gone on a bit since then, and I want to tell you a little bit more about what we're doing and where things are going and what we're hoping to try to get at and why. This is joint work with Marvi Catalizzano, my colleague at the University of Genoa, and Sandro Gimigliano, who's at the University of Bologna. Let's see if I can get all this to work right. So what am I going to be talking about? Start that I'll use capital X to describe a reduced, irreducible, non-degenerate subvariety of projective N space. And if I take a bunch of points on it, I'll choose S, linearly independent points. And by that I mean that the space they span, the linear space spanned by these points, is actually a projective S minus 1 space. If I choose the points on X itself, I want to call the resulting linear space an S minus 1 secant plane to X. Okay? And the variety which you get by taking all these secant planes and taking the unions of all the points on all these secant planes is something which contains your original variety, X, obviously. So I can start with any collection of points I wanted to. And then if I close that up in the Zariski topology, I get a subvariety. In general, it's not closed. If I close it up in the Zariski topology on PN, I get something which is called the S minus first secant variety of the original variety X. And in the literature, one will find many different notations, unfortunately, for this object. Sigma SX to indicate that we've chosen S points, or sec S minus 1X to indicate that they're secant S minus 1 planes, or sometimes X to the S to indicate again that you take X cross X cross X, you've chosen points on this variety. So all of these things are used in the literature. I'll stick with the first one for today, sigma S of X, okay, to describe this variety. Many of you have probably heard about this variety in the context of secant lines, the secant line variety to a variety. And that's the one that most people know about, and it was introduced a long time ago simply for discussing projections of varieties. Usually, if you want to take a variety and you'd like to consider it in the smallest possible space that you might want to embed it in, and so you'd like to project from some point off the variety and get it to go down and be not change any of its properties, keep it isomorphic to the variety you began with, and you better be very careful when you do such a projection that you have not projected from a point on the secant variety. Because if you project from a point on the secant, let's say even line variety, the line that you're projecting on will pass through the variety in a certain number of points, and they will all become equal in the projection, and you will have introduced a singularity that wasn't there before, necessarily. So people have always been interested in knowing how big these varieties are. In fact, so that's projections. In fact, to talk about the projections from points off the higher secant varieties, that's when you want other properties. And I don't want to go into that too much, why you would be interested in projecting from points off the secant S minus 1 variety, for example, X. But there are several papers by Luca Chiantini and Ciro Ciliberto which explain all this information about these higher order projections. That's one reason for studying these varieties. We'll see today, and I'll talk about it in another context, the nature of these varieties is very important for discussing problems in computational complexity. The problem, for example, of how many operations it takes to multiply matrices together, we'll see is a question that is connected with having to know problems about secant varieties to Segre varieties, in fact. And actually, even the computational problem in an algebra, any finite dimensional algebra, not necessarily just the polynomial ring, but in any finite dimensional algebra, the question of the complexity of multiplication in that algebra can be phrased in terms of problems having to do with Segre varieties. So there are a lot of things. There are other reasons for wanting to know about these secant varieties. I've talked in the past about Waring's problem for forms. Many of you know about Waring's problem for integers, expressing an integer as a sum of kth powers, and Waring's famous problem, which asked what is the minimal number of kth powers necessary to express all integers as a sum of kth powers, and in particular, what's the minimum number for almost all integers? This, the two Waring problems, the so-called big problem and little problem. There are analogous formulations of that problem, not necessarily only for integers, but for polynomials, expressing a polynomial as a sum of powers of linear forms, for example. And I talked about that in other meetings in the past. That's connected also with a question having to do with secant varieties, but not with respect for the Segre varieties, which I'll talk about today. So I'm not going to get into that one too much. Also, the nature of these varieties reveal very subtle geometry of the space X itself. A very famous theorem due to Severi, for example, says that the only surface in T5, which is non-degenerate and smooth, and has the, non-degenerate, reduced, irreducible, and non-degenerate, which has the property that its secant line variety doesn't fill the whole space, is the embedding of P2 and P5 by the quadratic Veronese map. So that's a very special property of a surface in P5, and it's related to the secant variety, again, in that context. Finally, I think these things are intrinsically beautiful, and probably it's the reason why it appealed to me first, right from the start, to try and understand these varieties, which are so naturally connected to very simple varieties. We know, in fact, quite a little about the secant varieties of even very familiar varieties, like the Veronese varieties, which are connected with symmetric products, the Segre varieties, which I'll talk about today, which are connected to tensor products, and the Grassmann varieties, which are connected with exterior products. These famous three things, algebraic constructions and the varieties associated to them. Even in this context, we have a lot of problems in trying to understand what is going on with these secant varieties. So it strikes me that we're sort of at the beginning of this discussion, even though this discussion about secant varieties has been going on for over 100 years. So it was the names of the people who were most interested in this at the beginning of the 20th century were names that many of you perhaps have heard of: Scorza, Terracini, Severi, Segre. These were the names of people who thought about these things. Palatini is another one. It was obviously a thing very interested. Italians were very much involved, and we still are. But it doesn't stop over time. But it dropped. It was dropped for a long period of time. There were just no new techniques. The problems got to a certain point and nobody picked them up anymore. Starting in about, let's say, 15 years ago, with the work of Alexander Hirschowitz in the solution of the Waring problem for forms in a specific case, revitalized interest in this problem because they had come up with new techniques. And those have now really propelled this subject for quite a while. So let me see if I can do this right. So what are we going to talk about? So what are the kinds of questions that we're going to consider about these varieties? Right? Well, the first fundamental question that comes up about these secant varieties is just how big are they? What are the dimensions of them? Or, a little bit more simply, when is it the case that the secant variety actually fills the ambient space in which the variety was sitting? It's a slightly simpler question. Well, obviously, if your variety is sitting inside a projective n-space, and that's the same n of the previous slide, none of the secant varieties can get to be bigger than that, so that's an obvious bound on the dimension. But there's a naive parameter count that you can give, which also gives you a bound on what the dimension might be. So let's think, what are we trying to do? To make the secant variety, we have to choose, first of all, S points on the variety itself. And roughly, even though they have to be independent, roughly speaking, that choice is in an S times the dimension of the variety parameter space, namely the space crossed with itself S times. And every time we make a choice, then we have all the points on the S minus 1 space that we have there. So we end up with this upper bound, at least. It certainly cannot exceed this dimension. The dimension of the S minus first secant variety is always less than or equal to S times the dimension of X plus S minus 1. So we get this inequality, the minimum of these two numbers, N and S times the dimension of X plus S minus 1. And that number, that minimum, we call the expected dimension of X. And I'll denote it ES of X. Quite a few times, unfortunately, the expected dimension is actually larger than the actual dimension. This is the biggest it possibly could be. So we look at the difference between the actual dimension. Oh, I guess there's a button here. Yeah, here it is. Between the actual dimension and the expected dimension, and that number is called the deficiency. Okay. And we make this statement. It's deficient with deficiency S minus 1. So let me give you an example of the first kind of thing that would come up. I'm going to look at the Segre embedding of P2 cross P2. There are three coordinates in the first P2, three coordinates in the second P2. We go into an A9, which is a P8, and oh, let's see, which I'm going to suggestively describe as follows. So this is the way the map is defined. It takes the first set of coordinates there, A0, 1, A2, from the first P2 with the other set, and I'll write the 9 coordinates of the image of that pair of points in P8. I'll write it as a matrix. Okay? And then, of course, everything is being done projectively, so it's a matrix up to scalar multiplication. So if we denote this last matrix by M, then you'll notice that this matrix is nothing more than the 3x3 matrix you get by multiplying a column by a row. And that's another way to say that this is a matrix of rank 1, since at least neither of these two, A0, A1, or 2, or B0, B1, B2, can be identically 0. We're talking about points in projective space. So since neither of them can be 0, this is a matrix of rank exactly 1. So the image of the Segre variety, of the two factors at least here, the image of this map is nothing more than the matrices of rank 1. So if we're looking for Pn cross Pm, we're looking at n plus 1 by m plus 1 matrices of rank equal to 1. It's well known that that's an embedding, and in the case of P2 cross P2, inside of P8, P2 cross P2 is a four-dimensional object. So the matrices of rank 1 sit inside of P8 as a variety of dimension 4. So what do we expect then? By our naive guess on the dimension of the secant variety, the secant line variety, let's say, we have to choose two points on this variety and the line joining them. So it's a four-dimensional variety sitting inside of P8. Twice 4 is 8, plus 1 is 9. So we expect that this variety should, in fact, be all of P8, the secant line variety. That's what the naive guess tells us. It should fill the space. But let's just see, in fact, what is going on. It's just not so, unfortunately, because if we take two points of x, then what we really are looking at is a sum, lambda 1 r1 plus lambda 2 r2. That's what a point on the secant line joining those two points is. And that's a matrix again, but it's a matrix of rank less than or equal to 2. Now, if you've never looked at this before, you realize that if you have a matrix of rank less than or equal to 2, you can always, I'm looking at delta 1, delta 2, delta 3. Oh, I should use this thing. Delta 1, delta 2, delta 3, epsilon 1, 2, and 3. If a matrix has rank 2, there are two rows which generate all the others. So we can write how you generate the matrix, the 3x3 matrix, by choosing the coefficients alpha 0 and alpha 1 to really write this 3x3 matrix of rank 2 in this fashion, a 3x2 multiplied by a 2x3. And you can see that it's a sum of two matrices of rank 1. So we see that, in fact, the points on the secant line variety are always going to be of this type, and they're always going to be matrices of rank less than or equal to 2. But a 3x3 matrix of rank less than or equal to 2 always satisfies an equation, namely the determinant of the matrix is 0. So the secant line variety actually lives inside the cubic hypersurface of P8, which is described by the determinant. So it doesn't fill the whole space. It doesn't get any bigger than something seven-dimensional. We expected 9, but it was in P8, so 8 was the biggest it could be, but it doesn't even get to that. In fact, it's only seven-dimensional. So there is a deficiency in this case. The deficiency of the Segre embedding in this case is 1. We expected 8. We only get 7. 7 is exactly right, in fact, it turns out. This is exactly what the variety is. That's the only equations that are necessary. So this is an indication of the kind of thing that can go wrong. You don't really know what's going to be happening, in fact. And this example that I've just done in the case of P2 cross P2 into P8 is actually part of a large collection of examples which I'll describe in this so-called classical case of the Segre variety with two factors. So this is the situation when we're looking at the embedding of Pn cross Pm into P big N, where big N, so we're thinking of these things as N plus 1 by M plus 1 matrices, projectively. So that's why we're ending up inside this space, this PN, where big N is little n plus 1 times M plus 1 minus 1. And for simplicity, I'll assume that N is less than or equal to M, just to have something, I'll always do that. Whenever I write products, I'll always increase the dimensions as we go across. They won't be decreasing. They will be non-decreasing as we go across. So the embedding, the segre embedding of PN cross PM as a subvariety of P big N gives the segre embedding as the variety of these matrices which has rank 1. It's exactly the same argument that I gave in the previous case. Okay, and sigma SX are exactly the matrices of rank less than or equal to S. So we can see precisely what's going on in all cases. You need to get to N plus 1 in order to get the matrices to fill the whole space. That's the first time that you're guaranteed every N plus 1 by M plus 1 matrix has rank less than or equal to N plus 1. So you get everything when you get to N plus 1, and no sooner. And what turns out to be interesting is that every single one of the other secant varieties in this case is deficient. The example that we just saw of the deficiency for the secant variety of lines for P2 cross P2 and P8 actually is replicated all the way down the line, and the deficiencies are terrible because it's well known what the description of the matrices of rank S are. They're given by the vanishing of the S plus 1 minors of the generic matrix of size N plus 1 by N plus 1. And in this particular case, when you look at a generic matrix with indeterminate entries of size N plus 1 by M plus 1, and you want to know the matrices of rank S, you're interested in the vanishing of all the S plus 1 by S plus 1 minors. And the theorem says that this ideal, which is given by the polynomials, which are the determinants of the S plus 1 by S plus 1 minors, in the polynomial ring, in N plus 1 times M plus 1 indeterminates, is an ideal of height, N plus 1 minus S plus 1 plus 1, times M plus 1 minus S plus 1 plus 1. And you call, if I call that number H, and then if I look at the fact that we're dealing in a projective space of a certain dimension, this describes a variety of dimension N plus 1 times M plus 1 minus H minus 1. And all of these varieties are deficient. So actually, we know a tremendous amount about the ideal of the secant variety in this special case of two factors. Okay? And that's the point that I want you to get here. Because not only do we know the ideal, that it's a prime ideal of a certain height, so that the variety is irreducible, which we could have guessed just from the geometry of the situation, but in recent years, in the last 25 years, we have not only a description of the generators of the ideal, but in fact we know and have a description of the entire minimal free resolution of this ideal is the Egan-Northcott resolution. And gone on by, what's his name? He was your colleague at Montreal for a while. He's in Ferrara. His name just skips my mind right now. He was for years in Montreal. Help. Yeah. It'll come. We're all getting old here. We can't even remember our own names. Okay. Anyway, so this is the... Yeah. Yeah, it is smooth variety. It's a homogeneous space, in fact. Yeah. Latzko. Yeah. He worked on this, but there was another Latzko. L-A-S-C-O-U-X. That's a different guy. That's right. That's right. I'm mistaken. It's a different law school. That's right. Who? O-U-X. Okay. Oh, with an X. That's C-U. He's Italian. The other one is French. Yeah. It's the French guy that did this for the submaximal minors, and it was Egan Northcott for the maximal minors, yeah. So one actually has a tremendous amount of information about these ideals. Actually, their work is very important in many different ways. So I'm not going to even talk about that right now, only to mention that it sits in the background as a paradigm, and I'll say a little bit more about that later. So I'll come back to it in a minute. Sorry. Yeah.
So you have like the true mental variety by the big vector.
Right.
That resolution is due to less two or less two.
Yes.
But you don't have this resolution for the secant.
We do. Because the secant variety is the determinantal variety. See, that's the point. The secants are exactly the matrices of a certain rank.
Okay.
Less than or equal to a certain rank. So they are precisely the determinantal varieties. And that's the key thing to keep in mind. When we're taking Segre products of two spaces, these secant varieties are nothing more than the rank varieties for the generic matrix. So everything's done. Nothing to be said. And they're all deficient. That's the other part of this. They're all deficient. One makes the calculation and checks this. I won't do it here. It's just an annoying calculation. Just checks what you would expect against what you have, and they're all deficient, every single one of them. Now, in contrast to this, though, I want to say, when we pass to more than two factors, the whole game is a brand new game. The difference between two factors and more than two factors is entirely crazy. I don't know why, and we're trying to figure out why. And let me give you the first instance of how things are completely different in this context. This is a theorem that Marvi and Sandro and I proved a few years ago. Let's take any Segre product now, PN1, PNT, where there are at least three factors. At least three factors. And I'm going to order the exponents again, N1 less than or equal to N2, et cetera. The secant variety is never defective, at least up to the smallest. Now, we saw in the case of two factors, up to the smallest is as far as you can go, and they're all defective. And now, up to the smallest, they're never defective. Okay, so this is something a little bit strange that's happening here, and we'll look at a few more examples later. So the secant variety is never defective for S between 1 and N1 plus 1. Less than N1 plus 1. In particular, as soon as you have more than two factors, the secant line variety always has the dimension you expect it to have. Okay, so that's the first interesting thing, that the secant line varieties, as far as their dimension is concerned, always are correct when you have three or more factors, and now we know that. Okay, so the next fundamental question that one could ask is, when we have the variety, what about the equations? Can we say anything about the equations which define the secant varieties? What are the degrees of these varieties? In fact, we don't even know that. And more generally, what can you say about the minimal free resolution of the defining ideal? So this is really going on and on and on. And in the case of two factors, as I just mentioned, we know everything, and that's the paradigm. The paradigm is the case of two factors in which we know that all the varieties are arithmetically Cohn-Macaulay. We know the length of the minimal resolution. We know exactly what the graded Betti numbers are. We even have a description of the defining ideal, the equations, and a lot more. It's all combinatorial, actually, in that case. There's a lot of combinatorics involved in that, and it's a very beautiful description of what's going on there. And I'd like to extend this to three factors. Please. Okay. Well, there is connection to what we're talking about here. That's what I wanted to make clear here. There are other reasons for trying to understand this a little bit better. Sternfels has recently shown that there is this new subject that he has been pioneering in the last few years with several others, others in California mostly, but young guy like Seth Sullivan, who's now at Harvard, as a junior fellow, has shown that if we could get our hands on the equations for these varieties, we would be able to answer some of the questions that have been coming up in algebraic statistics. So he's very keen on knowing what the equations are, and he would love to know what the degrees of... He's asked mostly for the secant line varieties. Okay, so that's what he's been mostly interested in, because I want to be very clear about that. However, spurned by that question, there have been a lot of activity on this lately. There's been work recently by Joe Landsberg, Bernd Sturmfeld, Seth Sullivan, I mentioned them already. These two young people, I don't even know their names, Altman and Rhodes, are husband and wife. They are now in Alaska, so I don't get to see them too often. Cox and Sidman on doing toric varieties, in fact, have come up with some nice results in this direction. And I saw last week on the archive Lundsberg and Wayman have some information also about the equations. Mostly, all of these people have looked at this case of three factors. Okay. And now, Sternfels has conjectured how to find the equations for the secant line variety. And I want to explain his conjecture. And I want to talk about some extensions of that conjecture as well. So the idea is very simple. And keeping in mind that we know everything for the case of two factors. So what Sternfels says is, okay, you've got a lot of factors. Fine. Split them up into two subsets. Take any partition of the numbers from 1 to t into two subsets. So to make the notation simpler, I'll just take the first L of them and then the rest. Okay? And consider the composition, which takes, first of all, take Pn1 up to PnL, embed it into Pa. Do the Segre embedding there. Then take the rest of them, PL, P upper, and sub L plus 1 up to P upper nt, and send it into Pb. And then take the Pa cross Pb, that's only two factors, we know what's going on there, take it into Pa plus 1, B plus 1 minus 1, the last part of this, right over here. Now, the upshot of all of this composition is we end up exactly where we wanted to be, of course, and our original variety is not, okay, let me get to the next slide here. Where is this? Yeah, our original variety, the Segre product of all the factors, is the composition of these two maps, and it's certainly contained in the image of the second one. And the image of the second one we know everything about. Okay? So phi, if our original variety X is contained in the product of those two up there, these PA, phi 2 of PA plus the Segre product of PA with PB, then it's certainly true that if one is contained in the other, then its S secant variety is contained in the S secant variety there. And consequently, all the equations that we know for this, these points all satisfy those equations. So we get a whole bunch of equations, indeed, which do vanish on sigma Sx. Now we can do this any way we want. We can break this up in any way we would like. And we get a whole bunch of different equations that would vanish. I wanted to do this in a very specific case. This was too ugly to actually put on a slide. That's not true. It would have been lovely to put it on a slide. I have to confess. I have no idea how to put this on a slide. I'm still working with plain tech. So this becomes more difficult. So I have to admit my lack of technical skills here. So let's look at the map, P1 cross P1. Cross P1 into P7. So this is 2 times 2 is 4 times 2 is 8, so there are 8 coordinates, so we have to end up in P7. All right, and what is the map? It's A0, A1, cross B0, B1, cross C0, C1, and it gets sent in, and I'm going to do it this way. And I'll just label the corners 0, 0, 0. 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. And you can guess what the map is, of course. What I'm doing is I'm taking a tensor. I'm taking the tensor given by the product of these three and looking at it as a three-dimensional box. Rather than a matrix anymore, we now have a box. And this corresponds to the A0, B0, C0, A1, B0, C0, etc. This is the image. So these are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 coordinates of P7. Okay? All right, let me do now what would happen if I collected the first two and then took it with the next one. And let's see what we get in that particular case. So here, if I just do this one, we ended up with the matrix 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. And here we're going to go across C0, C1. Excuse me. And this time we're going to get 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1. And finally, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1, one. And you can see what we've done here. We've taken this, which is this face, this edge, rather, and this one here is this edge. Then we've taken this edge. Now, where is the third one? 100. Where is that? Here, this one. And finally, that one. So what have we done? We've taken this point of view, taken these two lines, and stuck them in between here. It didn't matter where we put them, because we're just looking at minors, so it wouldn't have mattered. And this process gives us a matrix. And it's the minors of this matrix, which are going to vanish, the 2x2 minors of this matrix, which are going to vanish on the image of this variety. So this process of going through the two steps and going first to a product of two projective spaces and then taking the next one is called, by Sternfels, a flattening. And you see where the word flattening comes in. We've taken the box and we've flattened it by bringing some face forward. Now, we could do this three different ways. We could do it this way, or we could flatten down, or we could flatten back. So there are, in fact, three flattenings, which correspond to the different ways we can group this one with this one, and then that one, and finally these two with this. So there are three different maps, and they're going to give us three different flattenings of this map. And the conjecture of Sternfels is that the 3x3 minors of all possible flattenings of the original tensor give the equations of sigma 2x. Now, notice what happens in this case. There are no 3x3 minors. So what do we expect that means? There are no equations. And that's exactly right, because I said before that this is a three-dimensional space. The secant line varieties always have the right dimension. What do we expect the dimension of the secant line variety to be? 2 times 3 is 6, plus 1 is 7. Should fill the space, and it does. That's the expected dimension. It does fill the space. There should be no equations, because the secant line variety is all of P7. And indeed, there are no equations from this point of view, so the conjecture is correct, at least in this case. Now, the recent work of Landsberg has proved that in the case of three factors, this is true. The Sternfels conjecture is correct, that the 3x3 minors of all the possible flattenings of the original tensor give the equations for sigma 2x. He also showed, Landsberg that is, that it was true set theoretically for any number of factors. In other words, if you do all the flattenings and you look at the common zeros are precisely the secant variety, but he doesn't know that that's the ideal of the secant variety. Yeah? Right. We're going on. We're going to go on. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. One might ask. Thank you very much. I'll tell you later. To what extent does this happen for the higher secant varieties? And can we extend this idea beyond the secant line varieties? And the answer is not likely. And I'll give you, there are a few reasons why. And nevertheless, we did not lose heart. And I will say something about that. The answer is probably not. One reason is there's simply not enough flattenings. And let's look at an example here to show you what I'm getting at. If we take five copies of P1, okay, this is the Segre embedding gives us a 2x2x2x2x2 box. And no matter how you try to do the flattenings, what you're going to get are 10 different 4x8 matrices if you bunch them 3 and 2. Or if you bunch them 1 and 4, you're going to get 2x16 matrices. And the minors, the biggest size minors you're going to pick up in this way are 4x4 minors. And 4x4 minors are only going to allow you to talk about sigma 3x. But you'll notice that in this particular case, P1 cross P1 cross P1 five times, gets embedded inside P31 as a five-dimensional variety inside of P31. And a five-dimensional variety in P31 has a sigma 5 that is clearly not the whole space just by a simple count. It's a five-dimensional variety. If we pick 5 points on it, it's 25, plus the P4, which connects them, is 29. Inside of a 31-dimensional space, there's always going to be hypersurfaces which contain even sigma 5. So the flattenings are not going to provide us, there are no flattenings, yet there are equations. Okay, but we don't know how to get them. No, sigma 5 is, sigma 5 are secant P4s. And they form a subvariety. The sigma 5 of X is definitely a subvariety of P31. So it does live in hypersurfaces. But you're not going to get them from flattenings, because these are the only flattenings that are available. So some things are doomed. You just can't get certain things. Now, in spite of this, there are cases where we can find the equations of sigma SX with S bigger than 1 from flattenings. That's what I want to talk about now. This is our result. In fact, we can do that infinitely often. And in fact, it'll turn out that our methods will give the whole paradigm, in the sense that we're going to find that one flattening is enough. And one flattening means that we're really talking about, even though it's for a sigma of something else, we are really talking about a product of two. It's the same variety as the variety you would get, the secant. Two different varieties can have the same secant variety. And we're going to show that different varieties can have the same secant variety as a product of two projective spaces, and consequently everything is known in that case. So that's basically what our idea is. And I'm going to give you an example, which is the first example we looked at, in which we discovered this, and it took us aback. So let me explain the example, which gives a rough idea of how the whole thing is going to work. Not precisely, but roughly. And this is the case of three factors, P1 cross P1 cross Pn for any n. All right? So if you do the math here, we end up in a space of 4n plus 3, and I want to find the equations of the secant line variety. Now, I want to emphasize that this is already done by Landsberg, but I'm going to give it to you in a different way. And actually, we'll even see that we get the whole resolution and why it's all going to work. We get a shade more here. So I'm going to consider the flattening that you get by looking at P1 cross P1, which ends up in P3, and then by Pn itself, just keeping it by itself. Okay? Now, we know that sigma 2 of P3 cross Pn, this one here, that's defined by the 3x3 minors of the generic 4x n+1 matrix. Now, I mentioned earlier how you deal with that. The ideal is given by the minors in the polynomial ring with 4 times n plus 1 variables, and it's a prime ideal of height 4 minus 3 plus 1 times n plus 1 minus 3 plus 1, which is, turns out to be 2 times the quantity n minus 1. Hence, it divides a projective variety in that space of dimension 2n plus 5. But go back for a minute. Our space had dimension n plus 2, and when we're looking at secant lines, we'd have to take twice n plus 2 plus 1, and that is exactly 2n plus 5. So all of a sudden, we have discovered that this is exactly the expected dimension of sigma 2 of x. So our variety is exactly the same as the variety sigma 2 of x is exactly the same as sigma 2 of p3 cross pn. So this variety that we had earlier, P1 cross P1 cross Pn, sitting inside of P3 cross Pn, has exactly the same secant line variety. Now, what's going on here? This seems a little odd. But we have to remember one thing. These varieties, there am I. These varieties here were exceedingly deficient. Their secant varieties do not grow very fast in dimension. On the other hand, these varieties with three or more factors, their secant varieties grow fine for a while at least. So even though the two varieties are different to start off with, one has its secant varieties growing slowly, the other has its secant varieties growing quickly, there is a chance that they're going to catch up at some point. And that's what we've in fact shown. And that's the basic. You know, if I wanted to give you the underlying reason why everything is working here, that is the reason. These varieties are tremendously deficient, the Segres. While these, although they are deficient, they're not as deficient. They get deficient after a while, but they don't get deficient right away. And that's the trick. So how am I doing for time, by the way? It's okay so far, right? Okay, so we can go on then. Okay, and this is what I just said. Roughly speaking, this is what we're doing. We're playing with the fact that the products are very deficient with two factors, and the others are not. Okay, so now that's the rough idea of why things should be working and the real reason why things are going to turn out to be okay. But now let me give you some idea, and only a very rough idea, of what the techniques are that we use to actually try to prove this. I'm not going to go into all the details of the technique, but I do want to tell you about some of the features of the argument. Now, one part of our argument involves looking at something which is related to the secant varieties, which were first defined by Tedeschini at the beginning of the century, 20th century, and these are so-called Grassmann secant varieties of a variety. The idea is very, very nice. These are instead of being our secant varieties lived inside the projective space which contained the variety itself. These varieties don't. They live in Grassmannians. They live in Grassmannians of k-dimensional subspaces of the big projective space in which we start. And how are they defined? So what I have to do is I have to describe for you, given variety X, I want to describe for you points in the Grassmannian of k-planes in k-spaces in Pn. And I'm going to take only those k-spaces which live inside secant s minus 1 spaces. So I'm going to take k to be less than or equal to s minus 1. So I'm not going to look at, the secants are linear spaces themselves. I look at the linear spaces of them, which live inside of those. And I do this as I pass through all the secant places of the variety and just take the k-planes inside those. That gives me k-planes inside the whole space, and those are the points of the Grassmannian I'm going to look at. Okay? And then I take the closure of that in the Grassmannian, and I end up with a variety. And that variety is called the Grassmannian, the ks minus 1 Grassmannian secant variety of x, sometimes written this way, sec ks minus 1 x. But I think to get the idea, we're looking at k-planes of Pn, but only those which live in fixed-size secant planes. Okay? Actually, I don't think so. I don't think anybody's done that. I don't know. These are very little studied. Terracini showed, there's a wonderful paper of Terracini. It's actually one of the few papers from the past that we were able to find. He shows a beautiful relationship between these and the segres. So he talks about a relationship between, Terracini was interesting. He did linear algebra before anybody noticed. Most of his theorems are, in fact, true not only in the algebraic geometric setting, they're true in the differential geometric setting. They're really very, very simple theorems which involve taking a matrix, and you need to know its rank or something like that, and rewriting it in a different way. And all these things, oh my God, that means something else. So, for example, the secant variety, maybe some of you remember so-called Terracini's lemma, which says that if you want to know how big the secant variety is, you can do this linear algebraically. Take S points on your variety, take the tangent plane at each of those points, generically, and take the linear span. That is the tangent plane to a point on the secant variety, and therefore gives you its dimension. Now, the observation that the union, or the span, of those tangent spaces is the tangent space to the original variety at a certain point. Now, if you try to think about it, you're lost. If you write it down, it's take a matrix, write it this way, reorder the rows, and there it is. So it's one of those geometric facts that I don't know how the hell Terracini ever saw it. I have thought about that thing into the depths of the night, usually with too much wine, but that could be a reason why I didn't understand it too well. But I understand the algebra, but I have never, ever been able to see how you could get that from the geometry. So it's kind of interesting fact. And he had a way of relating these dimensions, but you bring up a good point. Flags. In general, it's very difficult to describe these varieties. It's even hard to say something about their dimensions. But there's one very simple case. Let's think about another example, though. Take the secant line variety. We saw that the secant line variety, you describe it as a subvariety of Pn. It's the points on all the lines. But now, the only thing that makes sense is to talk about the line as a subset of the line itself. Those lines can be viewed as points in the Grassmannian. So that's the G, the sec 1-1 Grassmann inside the Grassmannian. So the collection of the secant lines as points in the Grassmannian of one-dimensional subspaces of Pn is something else. Okay? So we had the points on the lines. That was the secant variety itself. Then the line itself, and then we were finished. If we had planes, secant planes, through our original variety, we could have taken the points in those planes, and that's what we originally did. That was the secant plane variety. Or we could take the lines in those planes. That would be the Grassmannian of one-dimensional subspaces of it. Or the planes as themselves points in the Grassmannian of planes. And that goes on. So you have a number of these varieties that you can attach to the original variety. So in general, as I say, it's quite difficult to even find the dimensions of these varieties, but there's one very simple case in which we can say that it's in fact the entire Grassmannian. And that's the following. If you take a non-degenerate reduced subvariety of Pn of codimension S minus 1, in other words, dimension n minus S minus 1, then the sec S minus 1 of that is in fact the entire Grassmannian. So let me give you a little, I should prove something. So let me prove this. This is actually quite simple. Okay, so to see why this is so, let's recall that a non-degenerate reduced subvariety projective space of codimension S minus 1 always has degree at least S. A curve, a non-degenerate curve in the plane has to have degree at least 2. A non-degenerate curve in 3 space has to have degree at least 3. A surface, a non-degenerate surface in 3 space has to have degree 2. And so on. So that's the theorem that I'm referring to. It's a very elementary result about varieties. But this, what does this mean? This implies that the general Ps minus 1 of Pn has to meet our variety in points, and the number of points it meets it in general, is the degree. And the degree is at least S. Okay, so it meets it in degree D, which are bigger than or equal to S, distinct points, and in general, those points are independent. There's a subset of S points which are independent. So consequently, that plane, that general plane, is a secant plane. Since the general PS minus 1 is a secant plane, is a secant PS minus 1 to the variety, the secant variety that we're interested in is all of the Grassmannian. So it's a very simple little observation. But let's apply this observation to the cases that we're looking at, in particular the Veronese embedding. So in that particular case, what do we have? We have a variety, V, I'm now calling it V, it's Pn1 cross Pnt inside of Pn. The codimension of that variety is n minus the dimension of V, which is the sum of the ni's. Okay? So consequently, using that fact, whenever S minus 1 is bigger than or equal to that, the secant S minus 1 of V is everything. Okay? And the usefulness of that simple observation comes into play as I say, with our key lemma. And this is the, I'm going to omit the proof, this is a little bit of a wiggle. We have to work very hard. It says the following. Suppose you have a variety inside of Pn with this property, and we just saw what makes that property be true. And let's consider that variety cross Pn embedded in, V is embedded in Pn, big N, little Pn is embedded in little Pn itself. And now we take, this is, in some sense, a flattening, one particular flattening. If we have this condition here, then it turns out that sigma S of X and sigma S of Y are the same. So this is a particular example of what we were after before. We have shown that something which looks like this and something which looks like a product of just two factors, remember this V in our case is going to be a product of many factors, we're going to be able to say that sigma S and sigma Y are the same. Let me give you an application where this works, and I think I'll stop with this example. So I've stated the theorem. That was the theorem in the general context, but now here's the theorem when I want to apply it to the segue Pn1 up to Pnt. So we have for S minus 1 bigger than this difference, we have that condition, and that gives the result. So in this case, let's look at four factors, P1 cross P1 cross P1 cross Pn, this is a case that nobody has been able to say anything about four factors at all at this stage. We don't even know anything about the first or the there's no results of Landsberg except set theoretically what's happening with the equations. But here, if I look at the numbers that come into play, we have the P1 cross P1 cross P1 going into P7. That's the first three of them. And 7 minus 3 plus 1 is smaller than it's 5. And so for S's between 5 and 7, we get that sigma SX is sigma S of P7 cross PN. So as soon as N is at least this number, we're done. And so this told us, for example, that we know all the equations for the fifth secant variety of this, the sixth, and the seventh, as soon as N is at least, as soon as N is bigger than 7, we have them all. So for the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh. So somewhere in the middle there. When these things are a little bit unbalanced, we can get all the equations. They're exactly one flattening. They all come from one flattening. And we actually have all the graded Betti numbers. We know it's arithmetically Kolmogorov, something that we've been unable to prove even for these varieties in the general case. Unfortunately, even knowing that these varieties have the same S secant variety does not necessarily imply, at least I don't see a reason, why they would have the same S plus first secant variety. The two varieties are different. Their secant varieties coincide, but we don't know if the secant varieties continue to coincide. I tend to think that they should, but we haven't been able to prove that yet. Anyway, I think I'll...